afternoon. And in our second half, we are going to be talking with my friend, Senator Adam Moorfield. Adam, how are you?
Doing well. How are you doing, John?
Good. Thanks for joining us. Hey, you... go ahead.
No, I'm just said happy to join again.
Very good. So you made some news recently when you had made the suggestion, let's just get right into it, for red flag legislation. And I know that you were taking some heat on that on Facebook, but there has been some recent support of the idea nationally, including with Senator Lindsey Graham. Our own Ben Sasse earlier today at the legislative meeting said, voiced that there might be some room for support. And even President Trump has suggested that he might be amenable. So for the people who are listening right now, first explain this to us. What are red flag laws?
Yeah, Don. Well, so first off, we introduced LB 58, which is the Extreme Risk Protection Order Act, otherwise known as ERPO laws, otherwise mm-hmm. known as red flag laws. And essentially what it is when somebody is demonstrating that they are a significant risk of causing personal injury to themselves or others by having in his or her custody, control, purchasing, possessing, or receiving a firearm, you can get an emergency order to temporarily take away those firearms until there is a court hearing to provide all the due process so that that person can present their case and law enforcement or the significant other can present their case as to why that person poses a risk to themselves or somebody else.
Okay, well, Senator, thanks for being here. This is Roy Christensen. Tell us, how is this better than the current alternatives, for example, temporary restraining orders or civil commitment?
Well, you know, first, civil commitment is not an easy thing to do, nor should it be. And so there's a long, drawn-out process for that in many cases. And temporary restraining orders have been found, as, from law enforcement's perspective, to not be a proper legal remedy under the law to take away firearms. And so... So the long story short is that we currently have a gap in our laws to be able to provide a important public safety tool to loved ones and to even law enforcement. And the reason why I introduced this bill was, quite frankly, law enforcement reached out to me and said, hey, we really need this. And this is a tool that we could have used many times in the past, could have saved lives, and we don't have any ability to take these firearms away from people who are clearly posing a risk to themselves or others.
Okay, so in the United States, we generally consider that due process is required before government action. This means due process, you mentioned, takes place after government action. Doesn't that really take guilty until proven innocent and put it on its head and institute sort of guilty until proven innocent?
Actually, Roy, that's an incorrect statement. Due process is not generally always... government action before something is taken. We have plenty of things, warrants, arrest warrants, search warrants, you name it, where the government, if they show probable cause, if they show justification and evidence before a judge, they can invade your privacy or take away property temporarily until you have a court hearing to either prove your innocence or, quite frankly, not to prove your innocence. And so due process is not about giving you the opportunity to be able to present your case before the government makes their case. Due process is about having the opportunity to prove yourself innocent or be able to prove your side of the case.
Okay, so let's talk about what happens if someone were to use this law to pursue a personal grudge. In your proposal, are there repercussions for somebody who tried to do that?
Actually, I create a new crime for that. It's a Class 3 misdemeanor with a sentence and punishment up to 90 days in jail and or a $500 fine to use this to, one, harass somebody, and that's the specific language used in the statute, the proposed statute, and two, if you lie in any of these statements or affidavits that are required to even receive this type of order.
Okay. Let me ask you another question about combat veterans. You know, I'm a veteran, not a combat veteran, but I know many people who are. And what's common among combat veterans, while they're still in the service, they might end up being referred to the mental health services that the Army has available or the Marines or the Air Force have available for them because of issues that crop up because of their combat experience. And so they will have a mental health record from the military. And I've spoken to a couple of these people, and they're concerned that their mental health records, because they are combat veterans, would be used against them to take away their right to have the Second Amendment active in their lives.
Well, first off, I mean, I think that it's completely unlikely that that would happen, because in order to be able to get one of these orders, it has to be accompanied by an affidavit made under oath stating specific statements, actions, or facts that give rise to a reasonable fear of future dangerous acts by that respondent. And so I don't think a court is reasonably just going to look at the fact that a veteran has a mental health history, and plus it would be really hard to get those records because they're protected through law, to be able to say, hey, we should take away their firearms. They have to do something. They have to take some kind of action that shows that they are posing a threat to themselves or others, and that people would reasonably think that they are going to use those firearms to do that. And so just simply having a mental health history isn't going to be seen reasonable by a court.
All right, 402-479-1400 if you have a question for State Senator Adam Moorfield. Adam, and one of the things that I have heard in red flag debates or conversations in the news, in the community, and on Facebook is the idea that there is a fair amount of data showing that something like this could potentially save lives in terms of suicides. Are you familiar with this data or this line of thought?
Yeah, I've seen that study, and we actually cited that study, I believe, during my testimony several months ago.
And can you flesh that out for us?
Yeah, well, I can't flesh out the specifics because I don't have the study in front of me. It's been 3 or 4 months. We had the hearing longer, actually. But the bottom line is that states that enacted these laws saw a decrease in suicide by gun anyway in those states because family members and law enforcement were able to intervene before they posed a serious threat to themselves, or when they posed a serious threat to themselves and before they took their lives.
So I think the salient point there is that there is data. This is a data-driven type of initiative, and the states that are pursuing it have data to support this idea.
Absolutely. And quite frankly, all the data aside, you can talk to other law enforcement agencies that have used this to protect individuals and used this to take away firearms from individuals who, quite frankly, said later on, yes, I was going to commit suicide. If those firearms weren't taken away, that's what was going to happen.
So we've got data for suicide. Then here's my follow-up question. In terms of mass shootings, is this something that could potentially be helpful or that could save lives?
I think so. Otherwise, I wouldn't introduce it. I think that, you know, the thing is this is a very targeted approach to gun reform. And I think that that's why you're seeing a movement on the national level, not just from Democrats anymore, but also Republicans, because it requires due process. It requires a court order. It requires due process after. And then it also is very targeted to individuals that are clearly displaying signs that they're going to cause serious harm to themselves or others.
Well, Senator,
if we don't pass this law, I don't know, quite frankly, what more targeted solution you could have.
Well, Senator, my concern is this. We're treating the tool as the problem rather than the person as the problem. And an example in this is just this week we had somebody who was very mentally unstable take a machete and kill 4 people in the United States. This law would do nothing about that kind of thing. Do you think people would just switch to another form of violence?
Well, it certainly could, but you know what? It'd probably be hard to kill them. Kill around 40 or 50 people with a machete before they were stopped. So,
well, maybe they'd use a bomb. I mean, we've got that stuff going on in our country,
maybe
too.
Maybe they could, but the bottom line is that they're not right now. The reality is that people are overwhelmingly using firearms, and that it is an anomaly, particularly within the United States as compared to other countries that are like us, that people die by firearms. And you don't have that same rate of death by knife in other countries, quite frankly, if you look at the data and statistics.
Sure. It's true that people kill people. Guns don't kill people. But people with guns kill more people than people who don't have guns.
A very efficient way of killing people, unfortunately.
Right. Okay. We've got a call from Gary. What is your question or comment?
Just a question. How many people were killed by knives last year?
I don't know.
I don't know the exact number, but I know it was more than the number of people who were killed with guns. And I do also know that more people were killed with hands, just your physical hands, than were killed by any other means.
That's kind of the point. It just seems like it's more of an infraction on the civil liberties. I mean, just like this, everybody register, everybody get their name in a database. And so then what happens when you have some unscrupulous politician that says, well, we're going to go around and we're going to red flag everybody that's not of a specific party. Or if we're going to confiscate weapons, which is what this is all about, doing away with the individual's rights, responsibilities, and power, what's going to stop politicians, those in charge, and say, well, let's start with the people that are in a different political party or that look different than we do. So please respond.
Gary, thank you for the call. We're going to have to take a quick break. What we're going to do is go away just for a couple of minutes, and when we come back, we will hear Senator Adam Moorfield's answer to that question. This is Don Mayhew and Roy Christensen. We're talking with State Senator Adam Moorfield about red flag laws. Just before the break, we had a question from caller Gary, who was asking about intrusion on personal rights by caused by red flag laws. Senator, did you want to address that?
Well, I mean, I think that there's always a danger of government intruding on people's rights. I think my answer to that individual is that we have a lot of checks and balances in our country in terms of that type of unlawful intrusion, or if it became lawful, I think that there would be a lot of people, including myself, that would stand up against that. I, too, am a gun owner, and I would never be in favor of people who simply are on a list of gun owners being targeted in political ways. I'd be targeting myself. I'm a registered Democrat, and I don't want to see that happen. So I think that you would see cross-party unity in blocking any attempts to simply have a carte blanche law that would label certain people that own firearms.
I think the other thing that Gary was getting at, too, was the concept of the slippery slope. And I think there are a couple of ways to look at that. Some people who would fear that red flag laws would be the first step to eventually taking guns away. But there are probably people on the other side who would think that red flag laws don't go nearly far enough to try to help prevent mass shootings. What do you think about that, Adam?
Well, I mean, certainly. I mean, there's always a danger that the laws will not prevent a crime. But I think that statistically, when you have the ability to take away a dangerous weapon from an individual who is clearly displaying an intent to hurt somebody or themselves, then you reduce that likelihood.
I would just to say one thing. There's no such thing as a dangerous weapon, only dangerous people.
Well, the weapons help.
But the weapons help. And Roy, I mean, in response to your comment about the other methods of killing people, I think that, you know, according to FBI data, the United States, 73% of all homicides are gun-related. In England and Wales, it's 3%. In Canada, it's 38%. In Australia, it's 13%. And I think that we can all agree that those countries have much more restrictive laws. I don't know if we should be that restrictive as some of those countries. But that being said, there's clearly a cause and effect here. And the bottom line is that there are clear steps that we can take in a targeted way to be able to ensure that people who clearly demonstrate that they are a danger to themselves and others should not have their firearms. And keep in mind that this is temporary, that this is only up until a year, and then it has to be renewed again, and they have to present that new evidence stating that they still pose a significant risk to themselves or others. So this is a temporary restriction, and it allows for due process within 14 days and every year after. And so, you know,
So when you say every year after, you mean that once you've had this done to yourself, done to you, it happens to you every year automatically?
It doesn't happen automatically. There has to be a hearing. And in fact, the other person has to request that hearing or the law enforcement officer. And so it's not automatic.
But it's automatic if somebody requests it, it just goes right back to where you started.
No, it's not automatic. There has to be a hearing, and there has to be due process all over again, and they have to present.
On the second go-around, would the person know ahead of time?
Yes, and in fact, they can apply to get the order and the relief given to them earlier. So there's all kinds of due process here. This isn't permanent. This requires new evidence to be presented every single year. And it allows for the due process to happen.
We've got about 1 minute left, Adam. I just wanted to ask, with the as I mentioned at the beginning of the segment, there does seem to be some bipartisan support, some support coming out from Republicans for this idea. At the front of that list, I think, is Senator Lindsey Graham, who was suggesting red flag laws. I think what he was talking about, though, was allowing it to happen at the states. Or how is what he was saying different from what you have suggested?
Well, it's not much different. Allowing it to happen in the states would be passing my law, quite frankly.
All right.
And so I would hope that we have comprehensive federal reform. But that being said, that's why we're
okay. Well, Senator,
we have laboratories of democracy.
Thank you for being with us today on Drive Time Lincoln. This is Roy Christensen and Don Mayhew. We've had a great time. Don and I have been hosting Drive Time Lincoln, and we appreciate you listening. And I say to Lincoln, I say, be excellent to each other.
Party on, dude.